favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
Congratulations on the new baby. I'm gonna see her relatively soon, I would imagine. Oh, fucking A.
Well, by the time this episode comes out, she'll hopefully be adjusting and screaming.
We'll hear the cat sounds in a couple weeks. Gotcha. Or maybe today. You never know. She's chilling right now.
She's been calming down a little bit. So.
That's good. So you're going to introduce chaos then. There you go.
Next weekend. I mean, it's hot and cold. Like, sometimes she's, like, absolute, like last week where she was, like, an absolute chaos monster. And then,
I mean, you were gone for a weekend, though.
That's true. Yeah. But, like, I've been here all weekend, and now I'm just,
now she's
like,
sick of you. Wow.
Yeah, now she's just like, I'm safe. And now I'm just like, ah, shit.
Oh, that's funny. Well.
Speaking of people who felt safe, but really weren't.
Oh, hey. That was a good one. I was like, how are we going to turn this? Okay, no, I dig it.
Go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes. How you doing?
I'm good. I actually wish I had a bigger breakfast. This claw's kind of getting to me a little bit.
That's why I ate that bagel.
Oh, man. I fucked up. That'd be fine. I got chips.
There's another one over there.
I might take it during a break. Let's see.
But today, dear listeners, very exciting.
Yes, no, fun time for episode 2.
We're bringing episode it 2 of season 3. We are going into another franchise that is near and dear to our millennial hearts.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Talking about Final Destination.
Oh my gosh, this one is like, we've done a pretty good like 90s era a month, but we were talking earlier, this is like a weird year 2000 film. Like, this is the year 2000.
Yeah, this is... Like I said, it's a great indicator of what the 2000s will be bringing.
Yeah, absolutely. But still, like, enough pre-9/11, like, weird 90s quirkiness.
Yes, enough of that pre-9/11, like, whimsicalness.
Yeah, but with, like, torture porn and gruesomeness attached to it. So
it's, like, it's getting there. It's learning.
It's clear, yes, absolutely.
Well, also the fact that this first one involves a horrific plane crash.
Oh, my gosh.
It's very much pre-9/11 because basically from the year 2011 to probably 2011.
2001 to 2011.
I'm sorry, what did I say, 2000?
2011 or 2011.
Oh, so 2001 to 2011.
In that 1 year. Could you believe it?
2001 to 2011, in that 10-year span. Unless the movie was about 9/11, most movies didn't go near planes.
They didn't touch them. No,
they were just like, planes don't exist.
It's like post-Twilight Zone with helicopters.
Oh.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
Except much bigger body count, obviously. But yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, big body counts is what this franchise is all about, so.
This movie brought creative deaths in films, like, kind of, like, to the forefront of people's brains.
Oh, absolutely.
And also imprinted memorable deaths on people's brains to the point of, like, even if you didn't see the movie, like, to this day, I know people who are afraid to drive behind, logger trucks.
Oh yeah, that's Foundation 2 for you there. Yes.
But like, I obviously that's not the case here, but and we'll talk about it eventually, but like people who still have that fear, and you know.
I still have that fear. I still totally am just like, I don't need to be in this lane.
I can get out.
Yeah.
Any truck that has anything that could potentially fly out the back of it and impale me, I'm like, okay, I don't need to be here.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, oof.
Yeah. So
no, let's
per our new tradition, we're drinking White Claws.
Yes. And we're doing 2 episodes today. So if next week's episode were like a really tipsy, just so you know.
Next week's episode, not only is it a shitty movie, but also we sound particularly drunk. That's why.
But enough about how the sausage is made. Let's talk about the synopsis here that IMDb provided us.
Oh yes.
So, after a teenager has a terrifying vision of him and his friends dying in a plane crash, he prevents the accident only to have death hunt them down one by one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's exactly it. That's 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. One by one. Fucking dead. And they did that for five movies.
And that, like, that's literally the synopsis, except for instead of a terrifying vision of him and his friends dying in a plane crash, it's after a teenager has a terrifying vision of bleep, mm-hmm. like insert tragedy here. Yeah,
exactly. So this was written by Glenn Morgan, James Wong, and Jeffrey Reddick, and directed by James Wong, who's a big horror fixture, actually.
Yes.
At least for an era.
for a time.
For a time. So this one is starring Devon Sawa, Ali Larder, Kerr Smith, and our boy Tony Todd. That's actually a good cast.
I'm just like, this is an early 2000s cast if I have ever seen
it. Right, because it also actually has Sean William Scott, too.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, good old Stifler. That's right.
Oh, gosh. Just the cast, and then also just the cast following. I'm just like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
In the defense of the Final Destination. Final Destination.
Yeah. Here are the list. You got it. Yeah.
The Final Destination franchise. It's a very well cast franchise.
I agree. Yeah. No, they always pick for the tone of the movie, the right teens.
Yeah.
Although, we'll get to two eventually. That one's the only one I'm kind of like, meh.
Really?
Yeah. Just in terms of the cast. Yeah.
I barely remember two. Like, it's like one and three. Like, I kind of just skip from one to three.
One, three, five for me.
Interesting.
Did you ever watch five?
Which one is that one?
The London Bridge. Or no, the Bridge.
No.
God, I can't. The five's the best one.
Hmm.
Like, by far. Hmm. Better than one. Hmm. Better than three. Five is the best. Controversial opinion.
Three is my favorite.
Three was my second favorite. It was my favorite for the longest time. But five beats it.
Wow.
Watch it on your own, I'm telling you.
Well, we'll get there eventually. Watch it beforehand.
I think you should. It's really good.
Okay. Anthony just lit up a little bit.
This one's good, though, too. This is pretty good.
It starts it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So this one was budgeted at $23 million, which is a lot, like, especially for the niche. Release date on good old St. Paddy's Day, March 17th, the year 2000. Last time happiness was ever happened in the world. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And the last time what?
Happiness was a thing, you know?
Oh, the year 2000?
The year 2000, and on St. Patrick's Day. That's the height of people just getting out, letting loose.
Yeah, no, I was 5 years old, so. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was four. I wasn't five yet.
Damn. I was older. So, this one actually grossed, though, a tremendous $112.9 million.
Jesus Christ.
That's why they made five, Alex.
I thought there were seven.
There were five of them only.
I could have sworn I remember seeing, like, Final Destination.
You're on the Paranormal Activity realm there.
I remember seeing, like, Final Destination 7.
Mm-mm.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Like, how sure?
I'm, like, 100% sure.
Hold on.
You get it. I have to Google only five. It. There's only five. No comic books, no nothing. Just Final Destination.
Okay, I'm about to be really fucking wrong.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really worried that...
I'm, like, 100% on this one.
I have to know.
Oh, no. Please confirm. I want this on record.
Okay, so they teased a Final Destination 6, but... Okay, but yeah, there's only five. Okay, yeah, fine.
They are going to reboot it.
Yes.
Yes, they want to reboot it. So,
okay, so box up. Total of the five films. Okay, fine. You were right.
And the fifth is the best one.
You were right. I was wrong. When did the fifth one come out?
Like 2011. It was
like 10
years.
It was pretty... Okay, I was going to say pretty fucking recent, but no. I'm again...
Time is weird. Yeah.
It's a nightmare. When I was like, I renewed my lease here, and mm-hmm. I was like, oh, it's been a year? And I was just like, oh, no, because I spent the last 7 months just sleeping in my apartment, like a mm-hmm. glorified hotel room.
Oh my gosh, I'm glad I have roommates, actually. That's kind of why. It makes it a little easier. But, yeah.
Wow. At least I have you.
And cats!
And, yes, and cats.
But, of course, this movie had a very, very interesting start. So, Alex, please tell us about how this shit manifested into a giant franchise.
Woo! Okay, so Jeffrey Reddick was an aspiring screenwriter who was always a fan of horror movies, getting his start pretty early. Aren't we all?
Yeah, right?
When he was just 14, he wrote a treatment for a sequel to A Nightmare on Elm Street, which went unread. He said, quote, I was a 14-year-old in Kentucky with no knowledge of screenwriting or how the movie industry worked. I had no idea what I was doing, but I ended up writing a 10-page sequel to A Nightmare on Elm Street. That's cute.
14-year-old, like, I'm invincible, I can do anything.
Before the world just kicks you over mm-hmm. and over.
Before ninth grade, ooh.
Was freshman year ever nice to anyone?
No, freshman year sucked.
For everyone, right?
Oh, yeah, that was bad.
Okay, if it was nice to you, keep it to yourself.
Yeah, shut the fuck up.
Ever the resilient teenager, Reddick found a way to contact the founder of New Line Cinema, Robert Shay?
Shay.
Yeah, and eventually got him to read his prequel idea.
Yeah. Be persistent, people. Yes.
I mean, that's nice. Mm-hmm. It is sweet. Seeing promise in the aspiring filmmaker, Shay kept in contact with Reddick throughout the years, eventually netting him a job at New Line Cinema right out of college.
Damn.
See, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
And that's 100% it, right?
Yeah. It's also like that combination of talent and luck. Like you have, like,
right?
And being annoying.
Being really annoying and being like, yeah, he's 14.
Like, if New Line Cinema aside, how many other like executives did he probably borderline harass, mm-hmm. you know, to get to this point? You know what
Reddick,
I mean?
This isn't going to stop unless somebody does something.
Bite the bullet.
Mm-hmm.
So while working at New Line Cinema, he came across a news story that pretty much changed his entire life. Quote, I was actually flying home to Kentucky and I read the story about a woman who was on vacation in Hawaii and her mom called her and said, don't take the flight tomorrow. I have a really bad feeling about it. She switched flights and the plane that she would have been on crashed. I thought, that's creepy. What if she was supposed to die on that flight? Unquote.
Hmm.
All right.
Yeah. That's scary. That's scary as shit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, especially post 9/11, if yes. anyone were to call me and say, don't get on this flight tomorrow, I would believe them.
That and, like, also a Hawaiian flight. It's like, oh, cool, the Pacific Ocean, so my body's done.
Oh, yeah, I'm amongst the fishes.
Yes.
I am fish food.
Mm-hmm.
With this idea in mind, he wrote a spec script called Flight 180, which he thought would be a perfect episode of The X-Files, which I'm actually just starting to rewatch right now. I'm on episode 3.
I haven't seen it in so long. I used to love it back in the
it
day.
It is so 90s.
It
is so good. I'm watching it and I'm like, wow, this mm-hmm. is awesome.
That good old, like, an episodic format, too. Which
oh,
is
yeah.
Nice.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, like, X-Files, based off of my limited understanding because I've listened to a single podcast about the X-Files, it kind of started the monster of the week format for mm-hmm. like the entirety of television, and they were like, oh, people like this.
Yes. New special effects every week. Cool.
So originally Scully's brother would have been the team that cheated death, but upon building the rules and the characteristics of quote death, he realized the script had potential to grow beyond the confines of the TV format.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been a really fucking cool X-Files episode.
I think so too. Like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there are two cop characters in this movie that are pretty sure they're like, okay, let's just change their personalities a little bit.
Oh, the FBI people who
yeah.
are just like just behind and also kind of stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we're like, fair enough. So a colleague at New Line read this treatment and told him not to even consider turning it into a TV episode. This concept was worth that of a feature-length film.
Damn. It's who you know. It's absolutely who you know.
Yeah. He soon got an agent, and New Line Cinema rewarded his years of loyalty by letting him write the full screenplay, making his debut as a screenwriter.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Again, incredibly fucking lucky.
Wow, dude, 14 also has, yeah, he's got ideas. Good for him.
I mean, that's nice.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, like, luck and then skill, of mm-hmm. course. Like, we talk about all the time.
You gotta have both. Absolutely. If this podcast, after this many episodes in, do you guys know by this point? Yeah.
Yeah. This original draft saw considerably, I'm sorry, these,
a little dyslexic moment right there, huh? Was, saw,
these, like, what is going on? Oh god.
Put your best Melania Trump impression right there. This original draft was considerably,
oh, I'm sad that this has to be cut out.
No, let it go.
That was so funny. Oh shit.
You got it. You got it.
Oh god. Oh, no, I just... Okay. So this I just imagine a good draft.
She'd be the worst guest ever.
Oh yeah, because she would just be like plagiarizing everyone.
Yeah. Like, wow. the last, you're just doing the last podcast on the left script. That's cool.
How did you get their script? Yeah.
Did you just listen to the episode?
You really just dictated their entire episode. Yeah. She's like, yes, I have a lot of free time on my hands. Oh, we're going to hell. Okay. So this original draft was considerably darker.
I just thought about her Charles Manson impression.
Oh, God.
I was making music and it like, yeah.
Oh, okay.
We're here. We got it.
We circled back.
We did.
We're here. Oh. Okay. Are we good?
We're good.
All right.
Another sip. Another Cheers. Sip. Ah, all right.
Okay.
Got it.
So, this original draft is considerably darker than what we saw in the final version, which is surprising considering that it's a pretty dark movie.
It's very
movie.
Dark, absolutely.
Rather than death using elaborate setups to engineer the murders of these lucky but still unlucky at the same time teens, death would play into their most personal issues and drive each teen to suicide. Mm. This includes even more characters who were not originally in the film. Okay, so this is, like, From Within, but, like, did you ever watch that movie?
No.
It was, like, a sci-fi film. It had Thomas Dekker in it.
Nope.
Interesting.
But it was a similar concept?
And the concept is basically, like, this incredibly religious town is overrun with this demon who possesses people and makes them commit suicide.
Very similar to this, clearly. Without the religious aspect, just angst.
Yeah, very teen angst and, really quick side note, because that's all we are at this point. I stumbled across it at night, and I was like, because I couldn't sleep, and I turned on TV, and I usually watch sci-fi because I'm a nerd, and I watched it, and I was like sucked into it, and like,
That's always nice though.
Oh,
when that happens, you're like, hey, I'm not changing this at all.
Well, remember, this is also before I was really allowed, quote unquote, to watch horror films. So I watched it, and the ending is very, very sad. It does not have a happy ending. Spoiler
that's
alert.
Cool.
Spoiler alert.
So for the sci-fi original, yes.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm saying I'm like a sarcastic asshole. But the point is I watched it, and then once it ended, I was like, I don't know if I can go back to sleep. Like, I was like, really fucked up by it.
You scared yourself into being awake again.
Yes, exactly. And I didn't tell my mom because I thought she would be upset with me for watching a horror film instead of, like, upset about the fact that her child was upset. And so I kept it to myself. And when I told her this, and she's like, I'm sorry, you didn't think you could tell me. Oh. Like, I told her this, like, a couple years ago, but I was like, oh, yeah, I was fucking terrified.
Oh, that's horrifying and hilarious.
Oh, in retrospect, it's a very funny story, but...
Just shooting yourself in the foot on that one. You're like, well, to calm me down. Oh, no.
But I was, like, sucked into the movie, and, like, that was kind of my inkling of, like, oh, I think I like these.
Interesting. No, that's nice. That's happened to me a couple times. I can't remember the movies, but, like, when I'm, like... get scared and like the house is too quiet.
Yeah.
Every noise is fucking me right now.
Yeah. And then I like had to scour the internet to like find the movie so I could like watch the whole thing because I came in like the second act.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So I kind of had to piece together like all the information they were given in the first act. But so I actually, so again, coming back, I really like this concept.
Right? It's
kind of
cool.
Even though it's really fucked up and would upset a lot of people, I actually really like this concept.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's a little more melodramatic originally. That's probably why the studio was like, we can't.
Yeah. So, yeah. Turns out, a bunch of teens offing themselves wasn't something New Line felt would sell tickets. But the dark aspects of the script had a strong enough concept that meant they could get a good director to bring their own flavor to the film and turn it into something special. That director was motherfucking James Wan.
That's right. Yeah. He knows dark. He does a good job. Yeah. So, of course, James Wong, if you guys don't know him, he was actually an X-Files alumni, having been one of the few members of the writing team to eventually direct for the series. And, of course, securing himself an Emmy during his run on the show. He was a big TV deal at the time.
Established.
Yes. And then, of course, also, he wrote the legendary episode Home.
Yeah.
Yep. With his writing partner, Glenn Morgan. The only episode in the entire series to receive a TV MA rating because of how disturbing it is. And yeah, that one was fucked up. I remember that. So he's the first.
Did you ever watch the episode?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, no, that one was.
It's season 4, episode 3, if I recall correctly.
I watched it in college with me and my.
Was it one of those things where everyone was like, "Oh, this is supposed to be the most fucked up episode, so we're gonna watch it"? Or season 3, episode 4.
It's one of those. Kinda. Me and Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Adrian. And my friend Nick. We would all get high. And hang out in Nick's apartment.
We would all, you know, get high.
We'd get stoned after homework and all this shit. And then we'd either watch Twilight Zone.
Oh, good. You're responsible stoners.
Yeah, exactly. We'd watch Twilight Zone or some movie that were like Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided, like, hey, I haven't seen The X-Files in a while. We did a run of episodes. But then we were like, everybody talks about home. Let's just, you know, see how it holds up. And, oh, yeah, it was fucked. It was pretty fucked up.
Well, I did research on this because this was before the podcast, so I would just go into Wikipedia holes all the
yes.
time for
oh,
things.
Oh, yeah, all the time. All the time.
Before the podcast because I had no outlet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading about the episode, and I was just like, oh, this doesn't sound that bad. And I don't know if it's just – and I haven't rewatched it recently. Maybe it'll change my stance, but again – remember how it, like, when I said, like, the Poughkeepsie tapes and VHS were, like, my favorite movies when I was in mm-hmm. college, and for some reason I didn't think they were fucked up, and now I'm watching, like, Poughkeepsie
yes.
tapes as an adult, and I'm like, what the fuck was I thinking?
No, same here, same
like,
here.
I'm like, same thing with Home. Like, I feel like if I were to watch it now, I would be, like, a shell of a human, but, like, when I watched it in college, I was like, this isn't that bad.
Yeah, and see, I think it's because we had Twilight Zone and other things, like, we didn't expect that.
Yeah.
Much, like, well, graphic kind of, like, stuff going on in
true.
The X-Files.
It's true. Well, yeah. No one expects to see a dead baby in mm-hmm. the X-Files, mm-hmm. which is why it got such a, you know, a bad rating.
Yeah. Well, this is a nice little X-Files episode we're doing right here.
How does Final Destination connect to the X-Files? That's how.
Yeah, we got the whole beginning here. So, but another cool thing about, of course, our boy James Wong is he's actually the first Asian American to earn an Emmy for directing.
Huh.
Yeah, something which actually caught the eye of New Line Cinema. The dude knew how to do creepy and had a long storied career in the industry going back actually as far as 1985. Around the same time, 14-year-old Reddick was working on that Nightmare on Elm Street prequel treatment. So, yeah, both coming up at the same time in a weird, different ways.
In very different ways.
Very prophetic. Ooh. but Wong also knew that teen suicide in themselves might be a little grim for the post-Scream generation of teenage horror films.
Whatever.
Yeah. So he ended up, he and his, of course, his writing partner, Glenn Morgan, decided to take part of the story in a different direction. So the team had one main goal in mind, according to Wong. Quote, we want to do for planes and air travel what Jaws did for sharks and swimming.
That's not... This quote is so bad in a post-9/11 context.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's bad.
But then that damn Osama. Oh.
Oh, God.
Oh, my...
That's... Mm-hmm. That's really, like, it's fucked up.
But it's true. But, I mean, they had 1 year.
Yeah, they got to enjoy the success of Final Destination scaring people.
Nothing's ever going to top this.
No! God damn it. Final Destination.
Oh, that's horrible.
That's fucked up, Anthony.
Anyways, back to the episode. In order to get this done, they knew they weren't making a slasher. That death wasn't stalking these kids in a more traditional sense. Their goal was to make a ride, less about if the character is going to die, but rather how they'd end up meeting their ultimate end. Because of the team's prestigious work in horror on The X-Files, and knowing that this was originally meant to be an episode for the show, the production got a lot of support from the studio, and everyone knew that they actually had a hit on their hands. But teen casting was a huge draw in this era, thanks to the likes, of course, of Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer. So they needed this cast to be really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So, I mean, we just talked about, like, how the casting for this movie had to be spot on earlier. But according to eventual lead Devin Sawa, the Canadian actor scared the living hell out of himself reading the script while on a flight.
Yeah. Bad move.
Oh, I mean, if you don't know, you don't know, but, like, that's bad. So, he had an interesting pedigree behind him, with childhood hits like The Little Giants and Casper under his belt. Yes, he played the human form of Casper. Yes, I knew I recognized him from somewhere. alongside the cult classic SLC Punk, which also featured Matthew Lillard and Jason Segel.
Dude, he's like... I remember Devin Sawa when I was younger. He was, yeah, he was kind of the shit for a little bit.
Oh,
for
yeah. Sure. But even with these films and a slew of others, it was his performance in 1999's horror stoner comedy Idle Hands.
Yeah, which we'll cover at some point eventually, guys. Don't worry, that's an interesting one.
that sold the production on his ability to lead Final Destination. Shame they didn't get Jessica Alba too, but that's all right. I do also remember seeing him on the cover of Idle Hands. I've actually never seen it.
It is stonery. It is... It's 1989 as fuck.
I kind of have this... I mean, it'll be a great 420 episode.
Mm. Oh, 100%. Jesus.
Maybe in April.
Maybe. It's something else, I'll tell you that.
So, speaking of 1999, actor Sean William Scott, who played the confident and crass character... what's his name?
Stifler.
In American Pie... was cast as Billy Hitchcock. The actor was drawn to the movie as it reminded him of The Twilight Zone, Yay. Another fun, scary TV show.
One of our favorites.
He also found it interesting that his character was originally written to be fat, which mm-hmm. I also find interesting, but okay.
Yeah, I don't understand the motivation there, but okay.
Sure, whatever. Mm-hmm. Dawson's Creek star Kerr Smith was also brought on board to play the jock Carter.
Yeah.
Ah. So, Allie Larder only had one episode of Dawson's Creek under her belt, but made up for it with a bitchin' 1999 filmography, which included teen films Drive Me Crazy and Varsity Blues, as well as a horror remake, House on Haunted Hill. I fucking love Allie Larder.
She's great. She was fucking great in Heroes back when
yes.
it was good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Shoot, like, that's actually what I recognized her from. Mm-hmm. And the first time I watched it, I'm like, is that... from Heroes?
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, it is!
The strong lady!
She's great! Okay. Regarding the leads, New Line Cinema originally wanted Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst to star in the film as opposed to Devon Sawa and Allie Larder, but Columbia snatched them up for the very first Spider-Man, much to the benefit of American audiences.
Oh my god, imagine
Can
that.
You imagine?
In this film?
No.
But also imagine Devon Sawa and Allie Larder as
Spider-Man.
As Peter Parker and Mary Jane Watson. Oh my, that's a darker film.
I kind of dig it.
I feel it, but with Sam Raimi's direction, I think he'd go a little more horrific.
Exactly. Like, I kind of dig
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But then...
Allie Larder would be a boss-ass Mary Jane, actually. Back
I
in
mean,
those
but,
days?
But she, exactly. But I think she kind of... She has, like, mean girl eyes.
Yes, absolutely she does.
Which is why I think wouldn't have cast her
mm-hmm.
as Mary Jane, because Kirsten Dunst has, like, doe in the headlights eyes.
She does. Mm-hmm. Like, she would have, like, pressured Devon Sawa's Peter Parker, like, we're gonna be together. And she's like, okay. And
no,
I have powers.
Would have grabbed him by the arm and would have been like, you're my boyfriend now.
Flash Thompson ain't shit.
You can kick his ass.
But then Tobey Maguire Lee in this movie is a little weirder.
Oh,
I know
could,
about that.
Well, him, like, just, like, being the little spazzy fucking
yeah.
babe trying to be like, we gotta get off the plane. It's gonna fucking blow up.
Oh, yeah. You know what, though? He's a good actor, but I feel
he
like...
Is. I'm not shitting on his acting skills, like, unless it's the third Spider-Man, then I will shit on his acting
clearly,
skills.
But I think he has too much of, like a baby-faced
Yeah, he's
movie.
Too big of a dweeb. Like,
he is.
Okay, the thing I will absolutely say...
would have killed his career.
very, very likely. The thing I will say about Devon Sawa is, like, he's enough of, like... He looks like an uncool kid, but also enough that, like, he probably didn't get bullied a whole lot.
He has almost a little Gyllenhaal to him. Like, a little bit. Not enough, but, like, a little bit of Gyllenhaal.
See, in my head, he has, like, the square jaw face that kind of reminds me a little bit of Jeremy Renner.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But something about the way he acts, too. I feel like he could have been Donnie Darko.
Yes.
Devon Sawa could have totally been Donnie Darko.
Oh, yeah, like the slack-jawed, like glassy-eyed,
mm-hmm.
like staring in his face look.
And
yeah.
that same kind of acting, like he would have just been like, why don't you go yes. suck a fuck? He could have landed that line 100%.
Like, I'm very, very glad Jake Gyllenhaal got the role, but also it definitely could have been him.
If there was a silver medal, Sawa would have been our boy, dude.
If there was a silver medal, absolutely.
He didn't get the role, sorry.
So, finally... the man you've all been waiting for.
Yep.
Tony Todd was brought on as the mortician William Bloodworth, thanks to his horror pedigree and iconic voice.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Oh, fucking boss.
I know. Though the cast was certainly set to a high standard, most of that $23 million budget was set to go to some incredibly bitchin' special effects. And there was a lot of
them. Oh, yeah, that $23 million? Hell yeah.
Well, and they had to stretch that $23 million in 1999 money for a lot of special effects. So special effects designer Terry Sonderhoff says, quote, "When I realized how many stunts there were in this film, I said to myself, quote, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into, unquote."
A big-ass movie. Yeah, definitely.
But honestly, this movie is, like, late enough in the 90s that the CGI is shit. Like, the plane blowing up and shit, like, from when they're all in the airport watching it blow up, that was garbage. Inside the plane, it was actually pretty good.
No, this is a weird one where, like, even the cinematography, I'm like, you're close enough to in the 2000s where you look slick as hell, and...
But the special effects aren't cool. Like, they're like a... Right there. They're, like, right there, but not quite.
Like, some are brilliant, and some are, like, still not quite... Spider-Man budget yet.
No.
Yeah.
They don't have Sam Raimi money.
They don't have Sam Raimi money, no. They got $23 million, which is still a lot.
I mean, that's a shit ton of money.
For the films we cover, absolutely.
For a horror film, for a late 90s, early 2000s
film. For a first-time director and first-time screenwriter.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, New Line Cinema really was just like, we like you.
It's like...
We like the cut of your jib.
Right? They believed in a script. What do you know? With different times. No committee there.
It's... Like, I'm flabbergasted. I'm just like...
Again, different times.
Yeah. What a difference 20 years makes. Which is also, like, the fact that the year 2000 was 20 years ago. I'm just
Jesus. Right? The committee would not have approved of this movie nowadays. Hell no.
No. Well, I mean, of course not.
No. But of course, to talk about how these things got done, filming took place in both Long Island and Vancouver, British Columbia. It was also very sporadic as these teens had TV obligations, damn it. They had TV shows and shit.
Half of them were in Dawson's Creek at the time. Yeah,
that's right. And
Dawson's Creek was still existing.
Yeah. But still, at least the special effects team had body casts to work with because they were set to kill the fuck out of these characters.
Fuck yeah.
Now, when it came to visuals, the film would have a different look pre- and post-plane crash sequence, actually. It was filmed and designed like a normal motion picture in the scenes prior to this whole plane shit going down. But any scene taking place after the crash would be noticeably absent of color and with something a little off in terms of set design. So to explain this a little better, production designer John Willett made angles and tables and other objects not quite 90 degrees. Like, he skewed everything just a little bit. With many objects in the background were also put just out of place or in unnatural spots to provide a sense of, like, uneasiness to the visuals. So, like, a clock would be way lower than a clock would normally be. Or a table would be just slightly askew. And one edge would be, like, one leg would be shorter.
I'm, like, thinking back to the movie and I'm like, oh.
There's a mood after that. Like, there definitely is. It's supposed to be very subtle. But, like, it actually is. They kind of nail it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. But, wow. That's
Isn't that
actually
weird?
Really smart.
Right? They're just like, no. Let's just open the fridge a slight bit. Yeah, the magnets are all at the bottom, not the top. How about that? Like, little things like that.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty brilliant. But, of course, production designer... Oh, I already read that part. No, didn't I?
You did.
I did. In order to maximize this effect, they had to nail, of course, the biggest scene in the film. The crash of Flight 180.
Eesh.
Yeah, so a full-scale mock-up of a Boeing 747 was built by the FX crew. Taking over 2 months and weighing 45,000 pounds. Yes. And,
Jesus Christ.
That's big. This structure was mounted on a gimbal that could move the set up to 60 degrees.
Babe.
Practical effects.
I mean, that's why it looks so good.
Right?
For 1999.
Those inside scenes, hell yeah. So when looking back at his first day seeing the set, Wong states, quote, "You walk into the studio and there's a huge gimbal with a plane on top and you think, what have I done? I was afraid we're going to have 40 extras vomiting." End quote.
Okay, excuse my ignorant question. What the fuck is a gimbal?
It's like this big old circular kind of thing that you can mount. You can, like, move it around. It's on like weights.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a giant ball.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll look it up later.
Okay. Let's I saw visuals and I'm like, that's massive.
Hmm.
Yeah. It wasn't just the extras, as some of the crew were supposed to be on the set to make sure everything actually went smoothly per take. So makeup artist Lisa Love states, quote, I was in the back of the plane for one of the takes. I remember feeling like the plane was literally going down, end quote.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah. That's, I mean, the 60-degree turn for, like, a 45,000-pound fucking set piece.
my heart just, like, drops right? out of my stomach
Isn't that
a
weird?
Little bit.
Ugh.
Especially, like, mentally, if you're sitting on a plane and you know, like, you're psychotic.
You have that experience of being on a plane.
Of course.
You know it's not supposed to do that. Ah. Mm-mm.
I don't like that. Also, considering that's one of my biggest fucking fears.
Me too. Before I launch every time. Ugh. And, of course, the gimbal itself actually broke on the first day using it, putting the production back a full day.
Oh, no.
This actually scared the crap out of Kara Smith, given the subject matter. But, of course, our boy persevered to eventually do, you know, other horror movies and shit later on. I remember in the interview, he was like, yeah, it was kind of prophetic. I was a little bit of a bad precedent. I'm just like, well, you know, you live, so you're fine. So chocolate syrup was used for most of the blood effects on the film, too.
Good old
Hitchcock treatment, exactly. And, of course, some in the special effects team referred to the body cast as life-size G.I. Joe dolls.
I don't like that.
It gives me, like, a weird Uncanny Valley kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like that.
No, not fun. So for the train wreck scene, the crew worked 12-hour days and used three cars. A stunt car, a regular-ass car, and a car that was hollowed out, stripped of all metal, cut in half, and then put back together. They really wanted to nail that special effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if they had any metal actually in the car, it would do the real thing that happened to Stifler and cut the fuck out of somebody when they crashed it.
Eesh.
Yeah, that's why they cut it in half, so it actually had an organic way of opening.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also, I was thinking, like, I mean, yeah, you have to have that many kinds of cars, because also the one that's, like, super hollowed out and has nothing inside of it is also a lot lighter.
Yes, exactly. So when it hits by the train, it actually organic. Like they said in the interview I saw, they were so proud. Like, they were like, we nailed that shit. Hell yeah. And they did. It looked pretty good on screen.
You're gonna fucking laugh at me, but I finally just put a face to the name for Kara Smith.
We covered him before.
I know.
We totally...
I know. Like, I know who you're talking about, and in my head, I can, like, envision who you're talking about, and I'm like, oh, that guy.
I thought of all people, you'd be the... You corrected me last time.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Well, because, like, when he mentioned, like, oh, when he, you know, like, the same thing that actually happened to Kara Smith when he gets, like, his head fucking chopped, which, by the way, was a fucking, like, it's not even, like, at the neck. It is, like, at the jaw when he gets...
Oh, that happened to Sean William Scott.
Oh, that's Sean William Scott.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
I'm flipping and reverse it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know these people's names.
Oh, Kara Smith, My Bloody Valentine 3D. Shit, whole husband.
Oh, shit.
Yes, he was Carter. Uh-huh.
Oh my god.
Isn't it weird to see him this young?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I totally didn't remember that, because I literally did not give a shit about his character in the movie.
Yeah, in both movies, he's a
character. Yeah, I mean, he's a prick in this one, but he also has that stereotypical douchey, like, look.
He's got that douchey eyes and eyebrow combination.
See, the other guy, I was just like, oh, isn't that the guy from Dude, Where's My Car?
Yes. Oh, that's, I should have actually put
you
that.
You should have
that
put that.
That's something you would, yes, that makes
I
sense.
I would have, like, I was like, oh, the dude from, you know, Dude, Where's My Car? And
yeah.
That made a lot more sense.
So, you know, also the rundown with The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. No, never seen. That was a good movie.
Nope.
Bulletproof Monk.
Okay, what part of I don't watch comedies don't you understand?
Yeah, all right. I get you.
Wow. Well, this was a fun little train of thought of mine.
Anthony explains the 90s.
Because I was a child.
And then The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was...
Okay, I fucking love The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah. But speaking of course, Sean William Scott, the fake head that they had actually looked so good, they took 15 takes of it rolling to make sure that they actually had the perfect close-up.
It was pretty fucking gnarly.
It was. They did a good job.
So, do you remember how I talked about forever ago on our arachnophobia episode? Thanks, mm-hmm. everyone, for listening to that. Where I was like, remember, like, how I mixed it up with another movie with someone getting their head chopped off?
Yes.
It was Final Destination.
It was. Nice. You know, they have very similar looking cinematography, though. It has that, like, dark blue.
I mean, the 90s feel also, mm-hmm. just, you know. it being a scary movie.
And then I feel like the budget for Arachnophobia with that like Spielberg backing made it look as good as like Final Destination.
Yeah, it's literally just the scene where his head gets chopped off and like he cuts to his face and he's like, oh, and like you see metal like spinning at it from the metal's fucking point of view.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's the scene.
Metal POV shot.
Yeah, which was like weird, but like also kind of cool. And I was like, oh, that's the scene that I got confused with Arachnophobia for some weird reason.
That's hilarious. But of course, back to our boys over here. Now that the New Line Cinema, who didn't do Arachnophobia, had spent over $20 million on a first-time direct writer's script and given creative freedom to a television director, they had to see if audiences actually liked this film. So for that, tell us a little bit, Alex, about these test screenings.
Oh, gosh. Technically, this movie shouldn't have worked. And technically, for the first time, first test audiences, it didn't.
No,
they fucking hated
it. They hated it.
They hated the first cut. Originally, Alex, not me, was set to die at the climax of the film with Claire, weird name, but also kind of cool, eventually giving birth to his child thanks to a sex scene that was ultimately cut from the film. Also, Kara Smith lived, which was almost never a good thing.
No, you can't have him live. Hell
no. Devon Sawa, Ali Larder, and Kara Smith were all called in 6 months later to order a reshoot of the ending. They dressed up Vancouver to look like Paris because budgets. Which
nobody's ever going to ask us about this.
This is definitely Paris.
Mm-hmm.
God, that was stupid. Okay, so they also had to add some scenes of Alex sticking around the house after Carrie's death via speeding bus, which was so shocking that test audiences completely missed the plot points immediately after, causing commotion for minutes after the shocking scene.
Yeah, like literally the bus kill was so shocking that they looked in the test theater and they're like, they're still freaking out. They're missing dialogue.
Yeah.
And so they're like, okay, have Alex make tea and walk around his house so people can get their shit together. Yeah.
So when it came time to screen for critics, well, they also fucking hated it. Kind of a lot.
Yeah.
Stephen Holden of the New York Times states, quote, even by the crude standards of teenage horror, Final Destination is dramatically flat. Newsweek said the film should be in video store bins. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
The Chicago Tribune even called it, quote, a mediocre TV movie, unquote.
They were vicious. They were very vicious to this film.
Yeah. Surprisingly, one of the major holdouts was our boy, Roger Ebert, who gave the film 3 out of 4 stars, saying, quote, they haven't made a great or distinguished film, but working within a tired genre with a talented cast, they've brought unusual substance and impact to the dead teenager movie, unquote.
Yeah, he has a category of those types of film, but he just calls them DTMs, dead teenager movies.
That's very funny. Yeah. So, in another odd twist, audiences very much agreed with Ebert and turned Final Destination into a sleeper hit in the spring of 2000. It opened third, which wasn't great, but kept making money for a while.
Yeah.
By the end of its run, it had made $112.9 million worldwide, which is fucking crazy, especially in 2000.
Yeah, it literally opened third and, like, not that great. And it was like, okay, well, this movie was a flop. And it's like, people are they just keep watching it.
It doesn't follow the traditional horror,
heavy opening
and then big drops.
No, this is so different.
Yeah, this one just was kind of consistent across the board for a long time.
Yeah, it did the Titanic route. But not billions.
No.
It's like 10% of Titanic.
I mean, but still, $112 million,
that's not bad. That's a lot.
The end of Ebert's review became almost as prophetic as Alex's death premonition, stating, quote, Final Destination will no doubt be a hit and inspire the obligatory sequels. Like the original Scream, this movie is too good to be the end of the road. I have visions of my own. Funny thing about Hollywood, it can't seem to get enough of dead teens. Talk about biting the hand that feeds you, unquote. I love Roger Ebert.
Right?
God.
That was such a boss-ass sentence in his review. I'm just like, all right, I'm including that. Because he's right. He was just like, the movie's too good. They're going to milk this bitch, and they're going to do it at the expense of their audience, who are going to see it. Yeah. Talk about biting the hand that feeds you. Oh, fucking gay. That's why we include him. Anyways, so even with most of its main cast dead, hell, especially because most of its main cast was fucking dead. Final Destination became a full-on franchise, gracing blockbusters and DVD sales across the nation. Because, yeah, this is still during prime rental time, and Final Destination movies were a top one for sure. But for a good look at how all that, of course, came to be, well, you know, we got Letterboxd. It's our thing. So let's talk about this. Final Destination has a 3.1 rating out of 3,800 reviews.
That's it?
3,800 reviews, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, not a lot. So Adrian Balboa states in his 4-star review, quote, "This is the most pre-9/11 movie in the world. I will not be any more specific. Thanks for reading."
That's funny.
That's good. Chris Richmond is less forgiving, stating in his 2-star review, quote, "More interesting as a concept than a film and hampered by having Devon Sawa as the boring-ass lead. Still, the concept is fun enough that these 98 minutes only half threaten to put you to sleep," end quote. Damn, Chris. Damn.
That's rough.
Mean.
We'll get to it. The discussion is next. It's
yes,
fun.
Coming soon. But Voidember.
Voidember.
Interesting name right there. Gives the film 3.5 stars, stating, quote, "I'm in love with the premise, especially death itself ostensibly as a slasher. Fuck yeah. But slap Tony Todd and John Denver in there and I am yours forever," end quote.
I can relate to that.
Yeah.
The amount of times when they're just like, almost heavy. And I was like, right? Damn. Slap.
And finally, Ethan says in his 3-star review, quote, "You cannot name a movie Final Destination and then make 4 other movies. Fuck off." I fucking love these reviews. Unfortunately, Devon Sawa's career didn't quite take off after this film, with his only real notable role being the lead in the iconic Eminem music video, Stan.
That's fucked up.
I know. It's a good music video, but that's it. That was done for him.
He looks like a young Jeremy Renner. Like, I thought he played Jeffrey Dahmer in Dahmer, which is actually Jeremy Renner.
Damn. Interesting.
I get them very, very confused.
You know what? Devon Sawa's he's just not yoked enough. He stayed scrawny. That was fucked
up. Well, that's
up.
The thing. Jeremy Renner is very, very skinny in that movie because it's Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, he yoked out to play Hawkeye, so he.
Yeah, you're thinking about 2011.
Yeah, that's
Dahmer,
true.
Or Jeffrey Dahmer. No. Jesus Christ. Way dead. Jeremy Renner. And I'm like, no, very different.
Oh, I know, but I'm just saying he managed to keep his career going by,
oh, absolutely.
By committing.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder what Devon Sawa looks like now. We gotta find out. Just before we continue, I have to know now.
Oh, wow. Very different.
Let me see. What the... Okay. Interesting. He looks like a music video producer.
He looks like a dad.
He looks like a dad. Okay. Interesting.
I mean, but also, he got his, like, 90s hit. He's 41. Jesus Christ.
Damn. Yeah. No, he did. He got his 90s hits, though.
I mean, like, oh.
He was of an era.
Dude, he's in Nikita.
What's Nikita?
It's a TV show.
I mean, he had stuff he did.
Well, then this is from 2010 to 2013. Like, this is a pretty popular TV show.
Is it?
A CBS, yeah.
Interesting.
I think it's CBS. Sounds like CBS, but yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he's had roles, but he was never, like, the star, you know? His career was kind of like, well, like Kara Smith and everybody else.
Yeah.
They just kind of do TV spots.
Oh, he voiced Flash Thompson in Spider-Man, the new animated series, and then also... Interesting. Yeah. Okay, CW, Nikita.
Okay, CW show. That's probably why I didn't know it.
Well, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
But yeah, so Jeffrey Reddick, our boy, also attempted to avoid the death of his career following this film, but was far less successful, unfortunately, as his most notable films all involved the Final Destination series, a straight-to-video remake of Day of the Dead, and a directorial debut that doesn't even have a Wikipedia entry.
Ooh, yeah. Rough.
Yeah, Reddick kind of fell off after this one. So Kara Smith would work his last horror film a few years later in My Bloody Valentine 3D, which we cover in episode 67 of the Horrible People's Podcast.
I'm really glad you look up the numbers, because every time that I know that we covered it in a previous episode, I'm like, it's a previous episode, just go look.
Yeah, no, I make a point to be like, where was that? And then when it's like that far back, I'm like, holy shit, we covered it. We've covered a lot. Jesus.
Yeah, and episode 100, it's coming up, guys.
That's right, coming up, guys. Oh, shit. But of course, the Final Destination series wasn't done with director James Wong and lead Ali Larter. However, neither was the horror genre. The kills would become more elaborate, the characters far sillier, and box office returns, surprisingly, even better. Yeah. So, but we'll revisit all of that when we cover Final Destination 2 eventually. For now, you guys know how this works. We're going to
talk about
this one.
I'm going to get another white cloth.
So, now that we're here, Senora Webster, what are your thoughts on the film and your experience with Final Destination number 1?
Oh, man. Okay, so I actually, this movie does not deprecate with time for me.
What do you mean?
Like, it doesn't get, like,
it doesn't get worse?
Yeah, like, the more you watch it, like, I can watch it, like, now, and then I can watch it, like, a year from now, and, like, it has the same, like, emotional impact on me. Like, it's, like, and I think that's probably a really good indicator of a great movie, right?
Yes.
Something that, like, I can watch multiple times, and, like, it doesn't depreciate in value.
Exactly, yeah. I'm like, deprecate.
No, depreciate, that's the word.
This movie doesn't defecate at all.
I am on white cloth number 2. But no, my experience with it was, like, is interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to, like, I'm really glad that we're covering it so I can develop new memories that are not associated with someone who I will not name on this podcast.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so that was my first experience with the movie. Is like, I was like, oh, I've never seen this movie. And someone was just like, oh, you need to see this shit. And I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. And I really loved it. Like, I was like, oh, this is that shit crazy.
It is, yes.
But it's fun. Like, it's so much fun. Like, I really, really like the Roger Ebert review because it's, like, it's not trying to be anything more than what it is.
No, and what it is, it does really well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I really like that, especially when it comes to horror. Like, especially, and I hate saying this, but, like, in, like you know, late 2010s, like, your 2018 to, like, 2020.
Yeah.
Where everything is so artsy. And I like that. Like, I do like that, and it has its place. But also, there's movies like this where I'm just like, it's just fucking fun.
I feel like we get the artsy at the expense of not having well-done movies with this vibe.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, well, nobody likes that. I'm like, no, we like that.
I like
it. Just do it good.
Just do it well.
Don't give us Piranha 3D. Give us something good.
Yeah, exactly. So, or, you know, even in comparison, like, a Killer Clowns type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like the campy. Like, I like the cheese.
Yeah, but, like, cheese played genuine. They're, like, not, like, isn't this cheesy, guys? They're just, like, the character's actually doing something legitimate, and it's cheesy. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So, I do actually greatly like this movie. Obviously, the sequels, I haven't seen all of them.
Which ones have you seen?
I have seen this one, and I've seen the roller coaster one, so the third one.
You didn't see 2? The traffic accident?
I've seen it once.
Okay, that's fine. Once is, it's not the best. It's the worst one. No, second worst to me. Yeah.
And then I don't know what 4 or 5.
4 is a NASCAR accident, which is, and it was like 3D, 3D. It was like 3D as fuck.
I think I saw, again, like, literally I was either high or just not paying attention.
It's bad.
I vaguely remember that one.
Mm-hmm.
So I did see parts of that one. And then 5 is a bridge, apparently.
A bridge.
Yeah. I just remember death. Like, I remember a guy being sucked into an escalator.
That's number 4.
Oh.
That's number 4.
I have seen 4.
You've seen 4, yeah.
Which I, and I just, that just, it was really fucking sad. I was like, oh god,
this, no, well, that's a scary, actually, death. But yeah, that was 4, and then 5, oh my gosh. Honestly, watch 5. I think 5 is,
so I have seen 4. I like that we were able to,
yeah. We've deduced.
I don't remember the actual, like, tragedy. I just remember, like, the gruesome ways in which people are fucking dying, but that's
super,
fine.
Super 3D, super, like, those angles, yeah.
3D, 3D. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was post-James Cameron. So that's, like, one of those, like, post-Avatar.
Uh-huh.
Like, we're gonna, like, wow, yeah, put the glasses on, charge more money.
You could have just said it came out in, like, the early 2000s, and I would have been like, I get it.
Yeah. But, no, 5, like, I highly recommend watching it. Like, don't even wait for us to cover it. Like, just watch it.
It came out after My Bloody Valentine 3D.
Yeah. Same era. Absolute same era.
Where everything was like, let's make, oh, God, I fucking hate that shit. I cannot emphasize how much I hate that shit.
Yeah, that's 4 100% is like that. Absolutely.
I do remember vaguely, mm-hmm. like certain things where like things would like fly at the camera, and I'm like, I get it. The movie's in 3D.
And they used so many practical effects, but they had such a bad green screen to super. Oh, it's stupid. We'll cover that when we cover 4. Like, honestly.
Do you remember when they were selling like 3D TVs, but like the early, the early 3D TVs when they were like projections on the screen and like all this weird shit.
Yeah, they have the glasses that are like special made just for your TV. Yeah. You can't use it for another TV. And ugh, it was so dumb. They cost like $4,000.
Yeah, they were like stupid expensive.
And you get special Blu-rays. It's like, yeah, don't you want to watch Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix in full 3D? I'm like, I didn't want to watch it like that in theaters, but you made me.
Or when they were forcing you to watch movies in 3D.
Oh, yeah.
And now, at least, I have the choice. And I never... I say this, like, with complete and honest, like, emphasis. I will never elect to watch a movie in 3D of my own volition.
Hell no. Hell no.
Like, unless... I'm like, I wear glasses. Like, I have to put these dumb fucking glasses over my own glasses. Mm-hmm. And then it always gives me a migraine. I can never see properly. I think it's stupid. Like, I fucking... hate 3D. I think it's pointless.
It's not worth the ticket price to have maybe one or two scenes be like, that's pretty cool.
That looks kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand the value. Like, I don't. Like, I just... yeah. I could go on about this for probably 7 years.
We're
going
to have more 3D horror films. Don't worry. We'll cover it. We'll cover it. It's okay. You're okay, Alex. Nobody can hurt you now. You're fine.
You're safe now.
James Cameron is doing something else right now. It's fine.
Never mind.
But for me...
Just drink your white coffee.
Okay, let's just knock it out. But I've seen this movie, like, it's one of those teen, like, like, yeah, this is a staple in the household kind of thing.
That's nice.
I'm not sure if I saw it in theaters or we rented it. Probably rented it, I want to say, but...
I remember seeing Final Destination in, like, rows at Blockbuster and being like, that looks like a scary as shit movie.
Yeah. It was a multiple renter. We did not, like, I remember there was a...
your frequent flyer.
Well, see, like, the I think 2 was a couple years after this. So that's during a part in my life where it was like, oh, we'll just, you know, I would rent Banjo-Kazooie for my Nintendo 64, and I'd rent a horror movie, and I rented Final Destination. But then 2, I was more of like a teen, but we did have satellite television bootlegged. So I would watch 2 all the time because of the pay-per-view channels.
I forgot you had bootleg satellite.
Oh, we did. I watched 2 all the time. Yep. And we bought the DVD.
Yeah, that was also my experience. There's this, like, cable horror channel. Like, not Shudder, but, like, kind of similar.
Yeah.
But they would play, like, all of, like Final Destination 3, The Curse of Chucky, like all of like the sequel, like the shitty sequels.
Yeah, the ones that you could afford the rights to air.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's how I ended up watching a lot of these movies because I would just be like, I haven't seen, you know, Child's Play 1, 2, 3, you know.
Exactly.
Like, I haven't seen any of these movies, but I have seen The Curse of Chucky, like, because of the shitty horror cable channel.
Oh my gosh. No, you know what, though? I in terms of, like, that era, this is one of those horror films that, like, the family, I think the first time I watched it was with my parents.
Really?
Well, yeah, my parents liked horror films, too. So they would rent scary movies. We'd always rent 2 movies. We'd rent one movie that everybody can watch, and then one movie my parents like wanted to watch. But sometimes they'd overlap, and we get to watch both. So, Final Destination was one I think us as children wanted to watch. So we all just sat and put it on our TV, put tape in, and yeah, we first time watching, like, holy shit, this is scary. But I love this movie. Like, I think it's really great. It has a nostalgic attachment to me, obviously, but I don't think it's a bad film. I really think. It is like a prolonged episode of The X-Files a little bit sometimes. Like, it kind of feels like a bigger budgeted version of that. It's like that type of scary.
Yes. It's not a scary movie in the sense, like, it's a supernatural.
Yeah, supernatural kind of eerie movie.
Yeah.
But you're not, like, terrified. You're more, like, concerned for, like, oh, shit, there's a fire in that house and there's a knife right there.
Right, exactly. Well, it's very tense. Mm-hmm. And it's not, like, I think... Not necessarily, it doesn't do the movie a disservice, but I think having a invisible antagonist kind of makes it feel that way. Mm-hmm. Because it there's not, like, a villain. Like, you don't have a Jason Voorhees. You don't have a Michael Myers. You don't have a villain that you can, you know, trademark.
Yeah, there's no tangible entity there.
Of course, as we do eventually learn, it's Tony Todd, but yeah. kind of.
Actually, in the original script, death was personified. There was a way that happened, but I think that was one of the first things they're like, nah. Sorry, bro, we're not gonna have death just stare and be like, can you kill yourself, you goddamn teenager? Like, we're gonna actually have this be metaphysical in a certain way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know. I think that it does, that's part of what gives it that, like, ooky spooky X-Files kind of feel to it, because mm-hmm. it's, you get the same kind of thing in X-Files. Like, the thing that's doing the bad,
the menacing shit,
you never see.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it. And also the fact that you have an X-Files director directing the movie.
Who knows how to frame that shit.
Who knows how to make it look kind of like, you know, you stick to what you know.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know what? His designer, though, making everything a little askew,
that's fucking brilliant.
I think it's brilliant.
Like, and I didn't even realize it, so now I want to go back and kind of look for that shit. Because it does kind of give you that, like, unsettling feeling. Even, like, that chaotic framing and
Alex, main character,
is when he's sitting in that room and he's like afraid everything in that room's gonna kill him.
That's the scene that's where I think of a reference for that.
Exactly.
Yes.
I kind of pick up on it because it's like everything is slightly off kilter and like it's messy mm-hmm. and like he's like terrified that everything, he's like looking for things that's gonna fucking kill him.
It's like a grounded Tim Burton kind of like way of doing
that's
things.
That's a great way to explain it. Yeah.
Like without that fantastical like, ooh, isn't Edward Scissorhands kind of gothic? It's like, remove the goth and just have that weird fucking architecture there and framing. Yeah. Oh, man, this is a surprisingly brilliant film in certain parts, for sure. I mean, it's still cheesy as shit. And it's still like teen murder horror movie.
A healthy mix of brilliant filmmaking and cheesy dialogue. A great horror film
great
mix.
Great combo. Great 100% great combo. Yes. So, with that, what makes this film so year 2000? Consider, of course, its position post teen slasher kill phase.
Phrase.
And, of course, 9/11. It's right in between. Like, what about
it? This is, like, the perfect, like, I mean, there's a lot of reasons that I wish 9/11 didn't happen.
Yeah.
But, like, this is one of them.
This is one of the top three, you know?
Like, I know that that's a weird phrase to take up context.
Yeah.
But please don't isolate that. But, like, no, seriously, though. I wish we had more movies like this. I wish mm-hmm. we had more horror franchises like this. And I think it a part of it is because it's a product of its time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have movies that take place, obviously, before this, your Screams and stuff that kind of set the stage for these kinds of movies. But then, obviously, you have such a short time frame until 9/11 happens that we have very limited things to work with.
I know.
This
just kind of shows you what the evolution of that 90s cheesiness would have turned out like a little bit.
Which I think it would have, you know, turned into something so, like, not whimsical, but, like, lighthearted,
mm-hmm.
like turning horror into this, like, not like a not totally humorous, because this movie is like humorous, but not like, it's still, I wouldn't call it a horror comedy.
Yeah, no, it'd be like imagine the Saw movie if people were allowed to smile.
Exactly. Or if like the Saw movie, if it wasn't all this like disgusting dirty yellow like overtones and like, and there was more to the dialogue than just everyone being miserable and tortured and scared.
And consider also how manufactured that became after that type of movie, where I feel like this is not a manufactured feeling movie at all. This feels to its heart a movie that people tried to make.
And then, of course, you know, post 9/11, how much money ended up being funneled into Hollywood just to mm-hmm. create better quality films to kind of distract people from the fact that, like, we're going into a forever war.
Mm-hmm. This movie is a personification of what life would be like if Al Gore got elected instead of George Bush. That's where this movie is.
Very possibly. Yes, very, very possibly.
Like, hey, listen, we could talk about heavy shit, but also, isn't that weird?
Isn't this interesting?
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think, I mean, on top of, I mean, like, I mean, we're strictly looking at subtext right now, but on, like, a surface level, the dialogue, just, like, the characterization, the fashion, like, all of it. I was just, like, this feels nostalgic, but not so nostalgic that, like, when I watch it, it feels dated.
Yeah. Like, Ollie Larder's, like, goth, but she's not, like...
She's, like, the like, dorky goth.
Where yeah. It's like philosophical goth.
Yeah, like. Exactly. Like, I'm like, oh, you read Sylvia Plath, don't you?
It's her fucking haircut. Yeah.
Oh. I'm like, you are exactly the type of girl I would have had a crush on in high school.
Them dark eyes. Oh, she's the best.
She wears chokers. She's different.
Yeah, But she still has that, like subdued kind of fashion.
Exactly.
Like, not,
where
like,
she's not
flashy.
Yeah, it's not like an in-your-face kind of, like, mall goth kind of fashion.
She's indie goth. So, speaking of the leads here, then, why did Devon Sawa not make it as a leading man? Why do you think, like, Hollywood overlooked him? And of course, how do you feel about him being the lead for this kind of character? Because he obviously sparked this franchise.
Right.
He led it.
I think he did great.
I think he did good, yeah.
I mean, I also just think, just based off of the nature of this franchise, no one is going to make it out alive.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So it's really hard to spearhead a franchise that you're just naturally going to die
that
in.
Death is the main focal
yeah.
point of the franchise.
Like, it's really
yeah.
hard to have one character. Like, also, I very rarely do you have a final boy.
That's a good. I like that quote. That's good. Yeah, very rarely do you have a final boy.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, and even then, you have him, and then you have the other guy, and then you have Ollie Larder, where they make it to the end of the movie, quote unquote, and then obviously shit starts happening again.
Yeah.
And it leads into the second movie very, very well. In a way that, like, if that movie had ended and that was it, mm-hmm. I would have been happy. But then it kind of hints enough at a sequel that, like,
oh, yeah.
it's like, the thing that I really like about Final Destination is it sets everything up in just the right way that it could really go either way. Like, they hedged
yeah.
their bets real fucking well.
That's that TV writing right there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're like, we could be canceled next season, so we need to give it a sense of finality.
That's a good point.
Like, we could be canceled next season, so we're going to give it this sense of finality, but also, like, a hint of, like, a future in case there's another season.
And make people want more if it didn't make it. Mm-hmm. Exactly. If it didn't make $112 million fucking dollars out of nowhere.
Yeah, almost $113 million.
Right there, right at the cusp.
And that's just with box office.
Words.
We're not even talking about franchising and DVDs.
Rentals and all that shit.
You know, the Anthony Fuentes of the world who are sitting there and just like, I want to rent that
one. I
want to
rent it, Mom. I know. I know we've seen it a million times.
Exactly.
Devin Salvo's great. But he is great.
So what about you?
Again, he didn't have enough of the Hollywood look, I don't think. Like, he
looks like a schmuck.
He looks a little schmucky, and he was like, if he did Donnie Darko, I still think his career wouldn't have taken off afterwards.
No.
Like, he's...
He's no Jake Gyllenhaal.
He's no Jake Gyllenhaal. He's not... I don't think he's tall enough. He's not... He's kind of got sharky teeth. Like, he's...
He does have chiclet teeth.
There's just something about him that's a little not quite ready for leading man. Now, unfortunately, he's enough of a leading man to not be a good supporting character. I think he kind of... The way he acts and his look overshadows what a supporting character could do. I can't see him as a second in command at all. I think... He should lead, but not the types of movies that made it.
Did you really say he's not tall enough?
How tall is he?
He's 6 foot.
Never mind. He's totally tall enough. They don't frame him that way then.
Well, also, he was, okay, what, this is 40, he's 41 now. In 1999, he was 19?
Yeah, okay. A little young guy then. Damn, he hit his careers in his teen and that was it. Fucking shame. But no, like... I think he's in that middle ground. Like, whatever movies they were making after Final Destination, he wasn't too type. He just wasn't that.
Mm.
So, because of the way the industry changed after this movie, fortunately, Devon Sawa was a casualty of that.
All right.
Yeah. Sorry. I don't know.
I think...
He's not a franchise face.
No.
He don't got it. He don't got it.
It's true. He also... I think of this every time I see, like, the theatrical poster for Final Destination. I'm like, you have like a porn star face.
Oh, that's funny.
He does.
He does a little bit, yeah.
And I'm just, every single time, I'm just like, I'm vaguely uncomfortable right now. every time. And I'm just like, this is weird. But yeah. So, and I can say that because he was 19. So.
but to me, he has a face for original movies. And original movies got pushed on the wayside. You can't have that type of player until you get people that do shit like Hereditary.
It's very true. That. He does not have, like, oh god, he would have been very interesting in Hereditary.
No, he would have been, yeah, in a fucking Ari Aster movie. In Midsommar, this version of Devon Sawa kind of would have made sense. As, like, one of the friends.
Yes.
Right?
He would have replaced Will Poulter very, very well.
Which one's Will Poulter?
The one with the douchey face.
A lot of them have douchey... Oh, yes. Okay, now I know what you're talking about. When you say douchey... Yes. Yes. Okay, I gotcha. I gotcha.
Him. but yeah, no, he would have... Yeah, no, totally. If you take 1999...
Devon Sawa.
Put him in 2019's Midsommar.
Oh. Yeah, he's ahead of his time. Honestly. He was just ahead of his time.
That's the thing. Like, he does not... Like, it's fucked up, but like... Hollywood has such, like, a penchant for, like, we want these incredibly specific, beautiful-looking people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I'm really glad that he got his shot in Final Destination. I'm really, really glad that he did.
Yeah, and he had a career prior to it, yeah. So he was doing good,
like,
for a while.
Yeah, no, I think it's fucked up that, like, they're just, like, you're not, like, the look that we're going for. And it's true, because, like, the reason we're only saying that, like, he doesn't fit the Hollywood look is because our perception of what the Hollywood look is because Hollywood decides what that look is because they only...
It's been shaped.
Exactly.
It's been shaped.
Exactly. And I think that's fucked up. And,
That's why he was on TV.
He was actually... It was a very well-acted film.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. Even with the dialogue, they commit. Oh, they commit.
Even with the, like, he's just, and even with, like, the shitty science that makes no sense, he's like, I'm gonna grab this electric line, and you're gonna get out of this car.
Because this girl made shitty art about me that I couldn't tell her was bad.
Because you make my dick hard.
Yes.
I'm gonna die for you.
I love all your paintings, baby.
like, this kind of shit where I'm just like, oh my god. Which also just... fondly reminds me of high school, where I'm just like, wow.
They're so high school, though. Wow. They're like, but they play high school so well.
It's true. Well, it just reminds me of, like, the guy in high school who did draw me, and I was like...
That's my chin, huh?
He did a great job. Like, I'm not even shitting on his art skills, but I was just like, I don't know whether to be flattered or freaked out.
It's funny.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Well, how do you feel about the way that death was actually represented in this film, though? That's like a big portion of the franchise here.
Of course. Tony Todd being the creepy mortician. It's great.
You know what, though? Canonically, a lot of the producers, everybody said Tony Todd does not actually represent death. The people behind the scenes say he is his own character.
I thought it was the opposite. Like, no, I thought they were like, oh no, we put him in every movie because he's death.
I think they alluded for a while, but at the end of the day, like, when pressured, it's like, no, he's Bloodsworth or whatever. But, like, honestly, fuck him. Like, he's totally dead.
They're like, fuck what you think. He's totally dead.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I love it because, like, him showing up and just being, like, a creepy, like, slow-talking mortician. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh, this is good. Like, because also, like, it's this overacted campiness about it that kind of also heralds to traditional horror films of past where it's just like, hello, I am Count Dracula.
Yeah, if this character was being interviewed by fucking Dr. Sam Loomis, I'd be like, that makes sense. That makes sense as a movie. I can see that. He's like, you gotta help me find this thing. Oh, you'll never find this fucking, like that kind of work.
Yeah. No, I love his character, and I love that he's, like, pretty much the only thing tying the entire franchise together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's in most of the movies. He's not in 3, but he has a voiceover in 3. During the climax of the film.
Exactly. He ties the whole thing together. Mm-hmm. It's like the rug in the Big Lebowski. He ties the room together.
He does. He absolutely does. But no, I like... And the fact that death moves in wind and in object and in, like, things that are, like, manifest itself. Yes. It makes you scareder because anything...
Scareder.
More scared.
Scareder, huh?
It makes you scared. But, like... anything can be manipulated within these scenes. And
well, yeah.
Oh, Five has such a bad one. Oh my god, like a gymnast.
Is that the one with the swords?
No, that's three.
Okay.
No, I'm talking like somebody on, you know, they do the flips on the poles.
I don't want to know. But I do, like, but I don't.
But I'll tell you, watch it. But also at the same time, it's another example how this whole franchise uses how the fundamentals of how death works in this film for the whole series and still is somehow able to be effective. Mm-hmm. Like, still weirdly effective. But because, you know, you make it so any object can turn into an instrument of your, you know, demise, which is horrifying.
I like that, and it reminds me of the series Dead Like Me. I don't know if
you've never seen it.
Okay.
I heard it's good, though.
Mandy Patinkin.
Nope.
Fucking good. Anyway, so I got into it when I was, like, in high school, because I was a little morbid fucking teenager.
I feel you on that one.
But same thing. Like, basically, you have these little gremlins who, like, manipulate the world around you so that the perfect fucking circumstances happen, so you die this freak unnatural death. Mm-hmm. And I love that shit. Like, because like, I mean, it's a way for our fucking, you know, pea brains.
Yes.
To, like, make sense of, like, how could this have happened in such a way that, like, it results in human death.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's a way for us to make sense of it and kind of comfort ourselves, right?
Yeah.
So, I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was a good, I mean, obviously it's good enough to make five movies, that, you know, of this whole thing. And right. A reboot that's coming. So, yeah.
So is it like a full reboot or?
I have no idea. I haven't looked that much into it, to be honest with you. It could either be a full reboot or it could be one of those like, here's the next Final Destination. We're going to Blumhouse it and call it Final Destination. Blumhouse it. And, but technically the other stuff happened. Like, you know, like it could be that. Yeah. So who knows?
So a Halloween situation.
Halloween situation for sure. I think in my mind, that's how they're going to try to approach it. But.
Is Blumhouse doing it?
Oh, maybe. I'm going to actually look that up right now. I can't even see who owns this shit.
We'll figure it out as more information is released.
Hold on, come on. Sixth film. Come on. There we go. Wait.
I could have fucking sworn there was a Final Destination 7. Like, I'm absolutely, like, on crack right now, I guess.
Yeah, totally on crack. Mm-hmm. Oh, Devin Sawa expressed interest in the reboot.
Of course he did!
Yeah. It's still New Line. Warner Brothers and New Line.
Okay. Not a Blumhouse.
Not a Blumhouse, but I feel like they'll take the model for sure.
Oh, for sure.
Definitely. So I'm going to skip the X-Files one. We talked about that already, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
What time are we at right now?
1:20.
Okay, let's do like two more questions.
Okay.
Which entry in the Predator did Luke work? Okay, I'll talk about that one. No, you know. I'm only going to do what about this film resonated and then kill the film and then go from there.
Okay.
So what about this film resonated with people so much that it actually managed to become such a big hit despite opening solo? Why do you think like it built such steam?
Killing teenagers.
Okay,
because teenagers tell their friends and then they have to all go. Mm-hmm. And then like, so that's probably how it happened, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just like, again, it's not trying to be anything more than what it is, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that also has something to do with it. Because, like, if I had seen this when I was a teenager, if I was a teenager in the year 2000.
This era, yeah.
I would have been like, this is so cool. And, like, me and, like, my gaggle of friends would have gone. I would have been like, ah!
That's how I was, yeah.
Yeah.
Except preteen, but still, yeah.
I mean, close enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, what about you?
I think it satisfies that part of the brain that caused torture porn to rise as fast as it did.
Yes.
But not enough to where that was like the whole movie. Like there was enough of a mystery and other elements too that made you want to like understand it, I think, a little better.
This has enough comedy and mystery elements that like it makes it a fucking movie as opposed to Saw or like Hostel or like shit like that where it's just like this is just people getting fucked up.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it did all that really well in addition to the gore and deaths that it made it people seek it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're going out of your way to be like, hey, this actually doesn't play like a Scream. It doesn't play like it doesn't play like those teen slashers at all. It actually plays like its own thing.
Movie, yeah. It does its own thing.
And it has the X-Files backing to give it an eeriness that is not present in a lot of horror films at the time. So, yeah. People were right. And then, of course, you know, the weird thing about this is the later movies made more money. Like, they did better.
I like that. Like, I like that, like, with it wasn't, like...
Diminishing returns?
It also wasn't just, like, money-hungry companies just being like, you're gonna make more fucking sequels and you're gonna make us more money. Even if it's, like, you know, less and less each time, you're still making more money.
Yeah.
Because, like, relying on people's dedication to a franchise... And then, because, like, there are people, like, I'll see a Friday the 13th movie. Obviously, we're not going to get one anytime soon. But, like, you know what I mean? Or, like, a Halloween movie. Like, I'll see a Halloween movie, like, no matter what. Like, no matter how many people say it's a complete shit fest.
Exactly. Yeah. But, like, again, they're not pressuring their people. Like, hey, you know, there's another Final Destination out, and we did this one. So, do you want to see people die on a roller coaster? Watch the fucking movie. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, because kills are obviously so important here. What is your kill of the film?
Perhaps the most important kill of the film question we've asked podcast. Yeah, no, absolutely.
I know, it's a tough one.
I'm trying to remember all of them. The teacher.
Yeah, that one was elaborate as hell.
It was really elaborate. Yeah. And then also, like, the fact that, like, Alex was, like, partially framed for murder. I was just like...
He made some dumbass decisions.
I was like, I know. As he was being like, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, you know, he had that teen, like, I'm going to help everybody because I'm invincible. Like, that kind of, like, attitude.
Yeah, then he's running out of a house that's about to explode.
Fucking Stifler's right there like, what are you doing, man?
He's like, hey, dude! And it's just like, oh, you fucking huge Labrador Retriever of a man.
Oh, my God. You know what, though? I'm actually going to go ahead and say for mine, and only because I remember my thought or my mentality when I first saw it when I was younger, was the bus.
Yeah, one was intense. Like, you're just like, oh, God, because it's so fast.
That, and, like, I still specifically remember the first time ever watching it as a child, and, like, her being like that, and then, like, I had that same test audience thing. Like, I was, like, shocked. I'm like... What? And, like, the whole thing, like, it's one of those, the first time you ever watch it, it's like, holy shit, you made a moment right there.
Yeah, it's true. I did have the same thing where I was like, what?
Yeah, I can see why they had Devin Sawa make tea afterwards.
So you could just gather yourself.
Yeah, you just get shit together. It makes sense. Ugh. And so, of course, what would you rate the Final Destination out of 5 Devin Sawa death theories? Because he's had a few theories throughout the film.
4.
You rate 4? I'm gonna give it 4 also. Yeah, I agree. I think it's a 4-star movie.
This is a classic 4-star movie.
Absolutely, yeah.
In every right.
And it's just enough of everything to be good on all fronts.
We never agree.
I know, but this is totally a 4. I 100%. Yeah.
It's a 4. I really liked it. It was fun.
I will say 2 is not a 4. But we're gonna get some, like, highs and lows with this franchise going forward, sure.
It's very, very good or it's very bad.
Yes, 100%. It's all those things. I agree. So, with that, we did it.
Final Destination.
Mm-hmm.
Woo!
Watch the movie, please.
Do it. Yes, we haven't actually said that. If you haven't seen it, do it. Yes. Watch it. Do yourself a favor. That's it for this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Next week. Fuck. Oh, God.
Want to hear us talk some shit? Stay tuned.
Next week, we're going to be talking bad shit. It's an anthology. It's found footage that gave it away, but that now you know what we're talking about. By all rights, I should love this movie, but I don't. We'll talk about it next week. But until then, thank you, everyone, for listening. And if you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. You can find us wherever, you know, you get your podcasts and everything. And if you would like to stay up to date on the latest and greatest with us, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We are on Twitter and Facebook at Horror People Pod. And we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE, People's Podcast. And then you can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler.
That's me.
And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
Yep, we did it.
All right. And until then, don't fly anywhere, not only because of COVID, but because of death curses.
Especially because of COVID.
But especially because of COVID. All right, until next week, guys. Bye.
See ya.